Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a News Talk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Conversation uncorked.
I say ban her from the front desk. Ban that Claire Byrne wagon.
So you're more Mrs. Brown than Panty Bliss.
That's a great way of putting it there now, Claire.
Putting down me butt on me gravestone.
Well, never have I seen it before. A psychiatric nurse and a panto dame.
The whole audience laughed because I turned around and went, oh no, you didn't. I'll show you how to rub your lamp to get the best wish. Will we keep going? Keep going, we stay on the script.
Never have I ever.
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 There are certain things in life that I've just accepted are probably not going to happen for me. Things like DJing in Ibiza, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we can safely say that at this stage. I'm unlikely to become a Formula One driver. And I think we can also safely say that I'm not going to climb Everest. Like, I'm 50. That's just not going to happen. But there is something that I've never tried that really does fascinate me. And I think I'm going to surprise you when I say what it is. Big hair, long lashes, billions of sequins, not millions, billions. Children screaming with laughter while their dads are completely humiliated in the front row. In the middle of all of that, there's a man who has become a larger-than-life woman for a few hours every night. I am, of course, talking about the life of a panto dame, and there are people who do this for a living. So never have I ever been a panto dame. But I know someone who has, and he's sitting here with me.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do. It's Rob Murphy.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm great.
Never have I ever been a panto dame. And we're going to talk about all of that and how you came to be a panto dame. But first of all, what's in the bag? The white plastic bag.
Okay, you ready for this?
Looks like it has calf manure in it or something. Dun, dun, dun.
This is the her, the wig. It's fabulous, isn't it?
One of many, though.
One of maybe 100, yeah.
I try it on or should you try it on?
I think you should try it on.
It is white, really, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of blondish white.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of you.
It's plaited in the front. And then it looks a bit 80s. What should I do? Go down?
Yeah, go down and go up. Oh, fab. I think you should leave it on for the entire podcast. Gorgeous.
My own hair is sticking out here.
It brings out your eyes.
How do you feel when you put that on?
Well, as you can see now, it's actually really light, isn't it? It's like wearing a hat.
It's really light.
And it stays on.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
How do you keep it on?
Clips.
Okay.
That now, for example, mightn't need clips, but most of the wigs need like loads and loads of clips.
Have I this too far forward?
Yeah, a little bit back. And you'd blend it in with your foundation. Yeah.
You criticise my foundation now.
No, your foundation's lovely.
Well, you talked me through the process. Yes. So you mentioned foundation there and this and the clips. I'm just, I love this now. Love this wig.
You're in your element.
How does it all work?
It's lovely, actually, the prep, because when I arrived to the theatre, nobody else is really there. So there's a nice quietness in the building.
You're first.
Yes, I'm first. There might be some techies around, some lights, some sound, but it's just me. And I go into the room and I might put on a podcast, light a candle, and it's lovely and it's quiet. And I start with the face. So the face will be way before the wig. The wig wouldn't be on until maybe 10 minutes before going on stage. When I start the run in December for panto, the face might take about an hour. But once we're into the run, then I can usually do the face in about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot. There's a lot going on there. So you start with foundation, you block out the eyebrows, you draw, and then it's colour, colour. Buffy's all about colour. So it's colour, 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 lots of glitter, lots of sequins. And I even glitter the lips. So when you're going to glitter the lips, no more drinks. So have your hot drink before the face. There's all those little bits that...
And then Buffy starts to emerge.
She does.
And you feel that you're changed then.
Yeah, I do. When I look in the mirror and I see Buffy, I do feel like I am her when the face is on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a traditional panto dame face. And when I look in that mirror, I just go, yeah, she's here. We're ready.
Does Rob then sort of
disappear
a little bit?
Yeah. I would be quite obsessional like about work and getting things right. So I'm always in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't completely die because you want to do the best performance. We have a saying in our industry, you're only as good as your last gig. you know, and you want to go out there and you want to be the best it's ever been each time you do it. And people have paid a lot of money to be there at Christmas at a time when families don't have a lot of money, and you want to go out and give them the best time of their lives so they go home happy. So yeah, Rob kind of disappears, but Buffy's full force then once I look into the mirror and I see that face and I go, yeah.
She's here.
Let's go wild.
Rob Murphy has been on stage since he was a teenager. During the year, the Dubliner runs a drama school and teaches young people right across the country. But for a few weeks every Christmas, he becomes somebody else entirely. Buffy, a whirlwind of wigs, sequins and one-liners, and one of Ireland's best-known pantomime dames. And this Pride Month, I found myself thinking about performance and identity. Whether it's drag, comedy, theatre or panto, what is it about putting on a costume that can unlock a completely different side of ourselves? And by pulling on a dress and a wig, can we sometimes become somebody completely new?
When you meet people for the first time and you say, I am a panto dame, like, what's the response? What's the reaction?
Yeah, well, I never say that. I say I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Or I say I'm a drama teacher. Or I say, you don't really say I'm a panto dame. On my wedding day, I do remember the celebrant said, well, never have I seen it before. A psychiatric nurse and a panto dame. The whole audience laughed because I turned around and went, oh, no, you didn't. I was on the wedding video for life now. But yeah, she called me a panto dame. But I don't
You don't identify.
I don't identify as, yes. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm acting as Buffy. And Buffy happens to be a panto dame.
Yeah.
But I am that character.
But it clearly clicked for you. And you are a well-trained actor. And we'll go into all of that background as well. But this role, what was it?
There's something, isn't there? So I've done panto before where you weren't allowed to go off script. You know when something happens in the news?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love coming out and doing that one-liner of something happened in the news today and the audience love it. Let's say there was Storm Ciarán or something. I come out with the umbrella. Ah, Janie Mac, the storm misses. I'm soaking. You know all that. Alan and Carol allow me to do that.
The freedom.
The freedom to be Buffy and to go be outrageous and to be wild and to be current. And you always want to be current. You always want, that's the whole point of panto, is there's these traditional fairy tales, but we take it into the current climate of what's going on. And, you know, we have the K-pop songs or the whatever songs that are out at the moment.
But you know, you say I'm an actor, right? Mm. When I see you and I've seen the panto year after year, I love it.
Yeah.
But you're more than that because you are playing with the audience.
Yes.
You're pushing it a little bit. Like you're bringing a lot of yourself.
Breaking that fourth wall.
So you're not standing there reciting lines.
No.
It's a lot of you in it.
There is, because you're improv the whole time.
And that's scary.
Yeah, I love it. That's the part I love the most.
How do you describe it? Like, are you venturing into being a comedian, comedy actor?
Yeah, you're right. Is it a comedian or is it an actor? You're right, actually. That's a good question. Because the audience improvisation is stand-up, really, isn't it? I just happen to be wearing a dress.
Yeah.
You know, because you see stand-up going, where are you from? And da-da-da-da. Mm. And that's how they do like 50% of their stand-up. The audience interaction probably would be defined as comedian.
And so why do you love that? What is it?
Oh, I don't know. It's new every day and you're mortifying somebody and it's just great fun. And if they say a funny name or, you know, like it's just brilliant and it makes the show because the audience are kind of like, when I go into the audience, you can kind of feel, is he going to come near me? Is he going to come near me? So that makes it all new for me every day.
My husband still does that. And we've been, I don't know, how many years have I been going to the panto?
Over
10, right? Every year I can feel him beside me tensing. I'm going, what's so scary about this? You know what's going to happen. They're going to have a bit of fun and then they're going to leave you alone. But it's like terrifying for
him. Yeah, because and the daddy who becomes the daddy, the one I pick on throughout the show, is kind of like a character. They kind of become a character in the show. So let's say it's Tom in the front. Hiya, Tom. But I'll come back on and say, Tom, you're still here. You know, Tom's looking at me. I can't do me lines. Tom's looking. But that becomes a character in the show. So that Tom character. Now, sometimes, this is a funny story. Sometimes when the shows are so together, so we might do a 3 o'clock and a 6 o'clock, so the 3 o'clock is probably down at 5:30 and you're back on stage at 6:30. It's very hard not to say the daddy from the first show name.
Does it even matter though?
I did so we now have a whiteboard in the backstage.
Oh, that's
so before
name.
I go on, the name is written on it because I did it once and I was mortified.
Yeah
because I'm a perfectionist.
And you're a trained actor. You trained in Ireland, you trained in the UK, you went back and did your master's then, didn't you?
A few years ago and did the master's,
So people in that world can be a bit snobby about panto, can't they?
Yes, they can. Loads of actor friends who are like,
don't talk to you. Do they not talk to you?
They do. They're just like, Panto is way more than theatre. It's way more than a show. I don't think you understand until you're in it. It's actually an industry on its own. Because when you're sitting backstage and you open Instagram and you have that message from somebody saying, last year, my mum was with us at the show. And this year, we're coming without our mum. Mm. But it's the first time we've done something as a family and laughed together as a family. And you kind of go, this is so much more than theatre. It's so much more than a show. It's a tradition. It's an experience. It brings nostalgia. It brings families together. Families who mightn't see each other for months. Because we go every night to that night to the Panto. We're going that night to the Panto. And when you get messages like that, your hair stands backstage and you go, we actually have a really important job as Panto performers.
But also on the other side, and I get that, that there's a loveliness to the whole vibe of Christmas and people going together. But it's actually really hard work.
Really
hard
work.
As an actor, isn't it?
Yeah, and my actor friends who do 8 shows a week, maybe in the Gate or the Abbey, but we do 14. And they're going to me, oh, I'm wrecked. I have 2 on a Wednesday. I'm going, here, love, I have 2 every day. Do you know what I mean? We have 2 every day. There is a kind of a snobbery around it when an actor does Panto, because we've had really good trained actors come and do Panto and play parks, and they go, oh, I didn't realise it was like this.
The intensity of it.
This is an obstacle course. Mm.
There's another thing as well, though, with kids in the audience.
Oh, amazing.
Are you okay with that? Because it can be challenging. Now, you're being very nice about it.
I know.
Love it, but sometimes, I'm sure it can be like, will someone ever shut the child up? No?
No. No. I'll tell you what it is. We get groups of women. We're probably the only Panto in Ireland.
It's us. We're worse.
The girlos come.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a few drinks before the Panto. And they're like, that can be a little bit distracting. I remember in the Tivoli one time, somebody, can I be a little bit, Sammy, show us your sausage. I'm on stage with Alan and I'm going, oh my goodness, she's after shouting. Will we keep going? We stay on the script. Yeah, so that was a group of like girlos out for the night.
I thought you were in stitches though.
I was in stitches. That turned me back to the audience.
You do that thing though with Alan, who plays Sam Sausage, where you have a laugh on stage. But I take it that's sort of scripted in, isn't it?
No.
It is.
It's not.
It is.
Sometimes an improv will come and it works really well and we'll keep that laugh in, maybe. But that is organic. They're not written in.
It works really well.
Yeah, it is organic.
You get more of a laugh from that sometimes than the scripted
100%.
Laughs.
I love when he calls me the wrong name or something. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. Or when an audience member is going to the bar and gets up and walks and we follow them and we make a show of them. Or just at the end, when we're just coming to the end of the show and people are going, oh, that's the end now. I get the last bus. And then you see them getting up to go. And we stop the show and making a holy show. Are you getting the last bus, Mrs.? Like that kind of stuff. Makes it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It just makes it so people are like, oh my God, I'm not standing up here.
Well, I suppose it comes back to what you were saying earlier about you having the freedom to be more than the script.
Yeah, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they do allow me to.
But still being Buffy, right?
Yeah.
You're still in character.
Yeah.
And going back to the lovely wig that I tried on there at the beginning.
Yeah.
What is the hardest bit physically? Like, is it the makeup? Is it the wigs? Is
the costume changes.
Tights. You wear tights, don't you?
Yeah, I wear studded tights. Yeah, Demonte tights, Claire. Beautiful.
How many pairs?
I actually don't change tights. Everything else changes.
But it's just one pair that you wear. You don't wear
double pair. Double pair. So I don't shave the legs. They're dance skins. So they're almost like a sheer legging. They're that kind of really strong material.
I would have said you definitely shave your legs for that one.
No.
Two pairs of dance skins.
One
there
studded.
You go, ladies. That's done.
One studded, one not studded. Yeah.
Studded one on the outside, is it? So they look glittery.
Exactly. Yeah. They look glittery, yeah.
So what's the hardest bit about the costume? Because do you wear corsets or anything?
Yeah. Oh, some of the dresses would be corset, some wouldn't. But I love it too because the show goes so quick because when I'm off, I'm changing.
Mm-hmm.
So the wig changes, the jewellery changes and the entire dress changes and she's back on in a minute. People say to me, oh my God, how do you... Well, I have a great dresser. Amy dresses me and she's just amazing. She's in the wings. She's ready to go. And sometimes I think that should be nearly a documentary. The changes alone, because I watched Celine Dion documentary and I was like, ah, she hasn't a patch on the Buffy. Not a patch.
I thought you wore a couple of dresses over each other and stripped them off. No.
No. So very rare, unless that's an on-stage costume change. Sometimes in a production number.
Yeah.
I'll turn and there will be a reveal.
So what is... Sounds like I'm like want to know what your underwear is. Well, kind of do, right?
Yeah.
So we have the two pairs of tights.
Yes.
That's established. What are you wearing underneath everything on the top?
I have a made bra with sewn in socks.
Yes. So you go backstage, take the dress off, and you're standing there in your bra, stuffed completely. With socks, and the two pairs
and
of tights.
Two pairs of tights. It's an image to behold.
And you don't traumatise the young children who are working on the show. No, they're
well. It happens in my dressing room.
Oh right.
Yeah. If it's an offstage quick change, mm-hmm. I wear a dressing gown.
And you like all it. There's no issue with this where you're going, oh God, the heat and the...
No, I love it. I love that every time she comes back on stage, she looks different. And now it's become a tradition, so people expect it. People are like, DMing, I can't wait to see Buffy's costumes this year.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that when I go to the Panda, because the first time she walks out on stage, she never looks the same year to year. She's always different.
Different. And I love that. And I've already started. So that's a wig for this year that you tried on.
Yeah.
So the wigs for this year are already started to be purchased. And the ideas, and I'll be texting Alan Carl, what about this? Or I saw this on TikTok. We have to get this for Buffy. So it's a whole year round planning the outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about you now, because you say, oh, I love it, and I love the edge, and I love it's unpredictable. But you're a shy person. Like, you're quiet.
Yeah, people expect, because you play a Banjo Dame, that you're outrageous like the character.
Yeah.
Love the sofa, Netflix, and away from the world. Yeah. Mm. I don't love the opening nights and the show business and the, how are you, darling? And all those. I don't love it, but it's part of it, isn't it? And you have to do it. Yeah, I am quite an introvert, which is quite strange to be such an introvert in real life.
Well, it's strange to pick this career if that's who you are, isn't it?
Yeah, but maybe that's what's happening on stage. I'm unleashing all the outrageousness. Mm-hmm. And then when I go home, But they say that comedians after a show are really quiet and get kind of, not depressed, but really, really down after a show because you're on this high. That doesn't happen to me. I get into the car, put on a bit of Cher on the way home, sing the way home. So happy another two are down.
Let's go back a little bit now. I want to talk to you about what a panto dame is versus a drag star.
Yeah.
Like what is there a difference? Is it the same
thing? I think there is, yeah. Drag to me is female impersonation, and it's a beautiful art form, and I love it. Like, I watch RuPaul's Drag Race and I think it's fantastic what they do. And it would be kind of nightclub entertainment and that kind of form, I suppose, whereas the panto dame is more family entertainment, and she's kind of a mother figure. Mm-hmm. And there's a warmth maybe to a panto dame where it wouldn't be as quite as bold as maybe a drag queen, you know.
So you're more Mrs. Brown than Panty Bliss.
Exactly. Yeah, more Mrs. Brown than Panty Bliss. Mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it there now, Claire. Putting that on me gravestone.
But did drag ever appeal to you?
No, it's not funny. Never appealed.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just like the work. I like to go into the panto, do the work and go home. But I'm also happy when panto ends in February. I get to chill and do other work. And for me, it's theatre. So for me, drag and theatre are two different things.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So for me, panto dame is more so becoming Buffy. That kind of big character, over the top, family, warm. She's often a mother figure. Whereas the drag queens, and I love them, Alden, the George, you know, they're brilliant. They're amazing at what they do. I just never wanted to do that, I suppose. Yeah,
it's different.
Yeah.
And have you learned anything, do you think, about women, you know, in dressing up in that way and behaving in that way? That it's hard work.
Hard work.
You don't even shave your legs.
Don't even shave my, and the feet at the end of the day, mother have mercy.
Oh, the shoes.
Yeah. And I only wear kitten heels.
Mm-hmm.
I only wear little baby heels, but I wear them in rehearsals now for the 2 weeks because the feet just get so sore. Like, I need to get the feet used to it again. But yeah, I feel sorry for you.
What do you do? Buy a wide fit shoe?
No, they're again, it's dancewear. So the dance skins, it's actually dance ballroom shoes. They're
dance ballroom shoes.
The silver glitter, yeah.
Uh-huh. So they're made for the job, but you still, they're still really uncomfortable.
They are comfortable, but when I get home and I am like, oh, how do they do? And like, you probably wear stilettos and stuff. Very occasionally.
Yeah.
But I've always been a feminist. So I don't think I learned that. Like, I've just always loved women. I've always had more women friends than male friends.
Yeah.
I love women. I love being around women. Sometimes I love when the taxi pulls up and it's the woman driver, because I know I'm going to have a better bit of banter. You know?
You love Buffy. Like,
I love her.
Do you feel like she is you, or is she separate to you, or is she a character on a page?
I feel like there's a bit of Buffy in everybody. I feel like we all have that outrageous side. Like, I think Claire Byrne has a bit of Buffy in it.
Well, this is the whole reason you're here. I want to know, could I do it? I don't think I could, because it just makes me nervous. Do you think I could?
I think you could, yeah. Mm. I think there's a bit of outrageousness in everybody, and there's a bit of wildness, and everybody has a wild side. And I think that's what Buffy represents for women. is, oh, when I was in my 20s, I was like that. You know what I mean? And my aunt comes and she's a nun. She's an 80-year-old nun and she comes and she loves Buffy and she texts me, go wild, Buffy. She sends me WhatsApp,
even
go
the,
wild,
even
Buffy.
Even the dirty bits.
Even the,
there are some dirty bits.
Ah, they're innuendos.
Yeah, innuendos. They go over the kids' heads. But we all get them.
I don't know if Auntie Anna gets innuendos, but she loves Buffy. And I get messages all the time, go wild out there, Buffy, tonight.
You could argue that the nuns are doing a bit of cosplay as well, though. Do you know what I mean? That's a bit of dressing up, too.
I never saw her in a habit, though.
Mm-hmm.
I've only ever seen her in normal clothes.
Well, she doesn't wear any sort of
costume.
Doesn't
do the habit, no. And the bad habit of not wearing the habit.
The other thing you could say is that we're all dressed up. We're all putting a costume on every day,
absolutely.
Right? In terms of the makeup and the hair.
Absolutely. We are. We're all getting ready in the mornings and that's who you believe Claire Byrne should look like. This is who I believe Rob should look like. And we go and we get ready and we leave their houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I do think that side, that everybody has a bit of that in them. So I think that's why people like watching Buffy, is because I think they think, oh yeah, when I was in my 20s, I was, or whatever, you know?
So then I just want to go back to you on your own in the theatre. You're getting all the makeup on, the wig, all of the rest. How are you feeling before the show?
Nervous. Mm. Yeah, always nervous because of that audience interaction. Who's going to be sitting in the front? Will they be up for it? Are they going to be okay? Always nervous. Never not nervous. Never not pacing. Always pacing.
You are a perfectionist, are you?
Mm, really bad here.
Because for somebody, how long are you doing this role? How many years?
15 years, going into my 16th year.
Logically, you shouldn't be nervous doing this job.
Logically, no.
But you are because you're putting the pressure on yourself.
Absolutely. Goes back to that saying that we have, you're only as good as your last gig. So you want to be better this year. Mm-hmm. You want to be feisty. You want to have more one-liners. You want to be delivering the gags. You want them laughing. You want them having a good time. All that pressure. Like I said to you, you go, oh, they paid now, you know, €35 ticket or whatever they paid. You know, you want to make sure they get the same show now they got last night, even though you might be a bit tired. Get the energy together.
And when you walk out on the stage then, the nerve's gone.
Gone. The minute I hear that. Applause. It's unbelievable. And I never take it for granted ever, Claire. But that entrance every year, and they just raise the roof and I walk out through them and up to the stage. And I just tell you, there's no feeling like it in the world. Yeah, once I come out from my entrance, deliver the first few lines, hear the laughs, then I go, gotcha, you're with me now. Let's go on this journey together.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Love that.
You're listening to Never Have I Ever with me, Claire Byrne, the podcast in which I meet people who've done the things I've never got around to or I'm really curious about, or just plain afraid of. I'd love to hear from you. What are the things that you've never done and why? And what's on your bucket list? Send me an email. The address is never@newstalk.com. This is Never Have I Ever. My guest this week is actor and teacher Rob Murphy. And it might be the height of summer, but Rob's already preparing for Aladdin, a Sammy and Buffy adventure at the National Stadium in Dublin next Christmas. Was it too early to mention Christmas? Sorry, podcast listeners, I've done it. Okay, so Rob, I have rapid fire questions now.
You're just a one take wonder, aren't you?
I'm reading, Rob. It's not that hard.
Sorry, I'm getting fascinated seeing you at work now. I'm like...
And listen, I haven't had you say the one Buffy line that we all love so much. I swore by my her.
Very good, Claire.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, fabulous.
I'll be asking you if
you
think
I'm a her.
That's it.
There you go.
Love it.
Yeah.
Rapid fire, right?
Yes.
There's no right or wrong answer here. Just going to ask you these. Okay, you ready?
Ready.
The Never Have I Ever rapid fire round.
Yes.
Is Buffy a real person?
Ah, yeah. There's an Irish mammy in everybody.
Who do you think takes longer getting ready, Buffy or most brides?
Brides?
I think so too. I agree with you.
Bridezillas.
Do straight men ever flirt with Buffy?
No.
Why not?
I don't even think about that when I'm Buffy.
I want that to be a yes. I don't even know why.
No, maybe they do and I just haven't noticed because I'm so into the character.
Let's watch out for that next time.
Yeah.
Is there anything Buffy would do that Rob absolutely never would do?
Well, I'd never go down to an audience and flirt with a man in like the middle of a show ever. I'm happily married and I love my husband, but
would never do that.
No, never do that. No.
Who are more chaotic at pantos, kids or adults?
Adults, those women. who come and they leave their husbands at home, they leave the kids at home, and they have a few pre-drinks.
These are,
and I heard
the,
it's a panto drinking game.
Really?
Yeah, so every time you hear thanks to Tailson, you take a shot. Every time you hear he's behind you, you drink. Now, I'm not promoting it. Yeah.
True or false, panto is much harder than serious acting.
True.
It is serious acting.
Yeah, it is serious acting. It's ups and downs and dancing and singing and everything in between.
What's the biggest misconception people have about panto dames, do you think?
I think because we're so outrageous on stage that we're like that in real life, but really we're like, I'm quite quiet.
Oh, people expect you to be a bit wild and you're not.
I remember when I moved out first, I got a room with my friend Mary in our house. People kept, Rob Murphy's moving in with you. Oh, he's wild. You're going to be out every night? And Mary was like, he's really not. He comes home and goes to bed. That's about it, you know.
That's the misconception.
Yeah.
And finally, is Buffy more confident than Rob?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just bursting with confidence, isn't she?
Yeah. Energy, outrageousness, wildness. She's mad.
I love that you can put the costume on and just be somebody else completely.
And we all need a laugh now more than ever. Mm-hmm. So it's so important.
What is the one panto cliche that you'd happily ban forever?
TikTok mentions. Like the 6-7 thing. I still don't know what the 6-7 thing is. Do you?
None of us do.
No.
I kind of do. It came.
Okay.
It was a clip of a child at a basketball game. Okay. They were talking about the height of one of the players, and he said, oh, he's 6-7. And he did that thing with his hands.
Don't get it.
Yeah. They just all do it all the time. Yeah. They do it because it annoys us.
Okay. So I thought the young ones just weren't telling me.
No.
And I was like, I got paranoid then. I was like, because they kept laughing. I was like, What? But we don't know what it is. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, they're laughing because they know it annoys us.
I hated that last year.
It's still there, let me tell you. It'll still be there at Christmas time when you get there.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So then how did it all start? Like, how did this role happen for you?
So I was actually, this is a funny story. So I was involved with a choreographer, and he was choreographing a show. His name was Brian Keogh. And he said to me, I'm directing a panto in Rialto Variety Group. In Rialto. And he said, the local panto dame, the man who plays every year, can't play it this year. And he'd been playing it for years. Would you play Widow Twanky? We're doing Aladdin. Oh, would I play? I don't know if I can, but I'll. Yeah, and I loved it.
And you were an actor at this stage, were you?
I was in training.
In training.
Very young. I was only 17 in my first year in college. So when everybody else was going out partying, I didn't get in anywhere because I was 17, but I looked about 12. So I got in nowhere. Fake IDs, nothing worked for me, Claire. Nothing worked.
Left at home.
Yeah. So Rialto Variety Group, Widow Twanky. I remember I came up to the audience on a little scooter and I put tinsel on the scooter just to make it a bit more. So I suppose she was always there, now that I think of it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was Widow Twanky in Rialto Variety Group. And then the following year, I got the Olympia panto dame. Then I was kind of like, oh, there's something.
But you were very young. What age were you? Can you remember when you
very
did the
young,
Olympia?
Probably 19.
Traditionally, would you need to be a bit more
absolutely
seasoned?
Speaking of age, I wasn't being seen for the audition for Buffy because of my age. I was 24. My agent submitted and we were rejected. And then a friend, a typical Ireland, a friend of a friend, you know, rang Alan Hughes and said, come here, you need to see Rob Murphy. I worked with him on a show. He emceed a show for me. He's hilarious with the audience. You need to see him. And Alan Hughes said, tell him to come by at 1:30. So I walked into the Tivoli and all these panto dames, the appropriate age panto dames, okay, were all outside learning their lines and doing all that. And I walked in and I just remember I sang a parody song and I did audience interaction with the plain seats. There was nobody sitting in the seats in the theater.
Oh my gosh, this is so difficult even imagining this.
And I did it. And I went down to the chair. Hiya, Daddy, to the chair. I remember Alan Hughes said to me, are you free these dates? Usually if you're an actor doing an audition and the producer says to you, you're free these dates on the way out, you have a fairly good sign. So I went to my friend, my best friend Elaine's house and paced her apartment. And then the call came in and I was delighted.
And you really wanted that gig?
Really wanted that gig. I was a fan of, it was called the Cheerios Panto back then.
Yeah.
And I was a fan of the Cheerios Panto and a fan of Buffy. And I was like, that's the panto I need to be in. I love her.
If you weren't doing panto, what would you be doing?
I have no idea. Oh my God. Yeah. Probably reenactments on Crime Call. I don't know. I haven't a clue. Yeah. I love it.
You are where you're meant to be. Is that how you feel?
I feel like going into my 16th year, like I love her. People say to me, what is it? Do you love it? No, I love her. I love playing her, you know, specifically her.
So what brought you to acting in the first place? Did you do class
when
you were...
I did classes when I was a kid, yeah. I loved it. Because I went to an all-boys secondary school where you couldn't be yourself. Right? You couldn't be fun, camp, outrageous Rob. It was a Christian Brothers secondary school. So you had to, you know, I had to kind of talk like that, right? You had to be, right? And on Friday nights, I could go in and I could spin around with the girls and do my dance class. So I think I saw the importance of being in a drama class as a kid and a dance class for what I did for me, the outlet it gave me.
Mm.
I think that's why I also went into arts education, is because Friday nights, like I would literally be living for Friday nights in school. I hated school. Hated it.
Because it was difficult to be yourself?
It was really difficult to be yourself or to be anything in those kind of sports heavy, all boys school. And it was just really tough. And on Friday nights, I didn't have to be somebody else. I could be me and do dance and do acting and get lost in a fantasy world and then back to the school on a Monday morning and be tearing my hair out. Yeah.
Were you afraid in school?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I was. They were sport lads. But I got away with absolute blue murder, right? Because I was funny. And I used to do impressions of the teachers. So because I did impressions of the teachers, I feel like I didn't get as bullied as maybe other people. It was other, you could tell there were other gay lads in the class. And you could see them maybe get more bullied. But I got away with the heavy bullying because I stand at the stop of the class and I do impressions of the teachers. You know, and I got away with a lot from...
That makes me feel a bit sad, though, that you sort of had to be... I mean, you probably enjoyed making people laugh. Of course you did, because that's what you do. But in a way, to protect yourself, you have to become a class clown.
Yeah, you did have to be, yeah. Mm. You know, people say, oh, God, she's been bullied in school. It was really, back then, like, everybody kind of got bullied in school. That's an awful thing to say, but you just were. Anything you said differently, anything you did differently was huge, you know, in the early 2000s, late 90s. It just was, you know.
Did you only do acting classes then when you were in school, in secondary school?
Secondary school, yeah. Okay. Kind of 13, 14.
So this was sort of to find your tribe, but then you realised, oh gosh, this is more than my tribe. This is actually where I should have been raised in this Friday night class. This is me.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember the dance teacher saying to my mum, Rob's found his forte in comedy. Sure, I didn't know what forte meant. What does he mean I found my forte? But I remember we were doing a show and he said, Rob's found his forte now. His forte is comedy. I was picked for comedy sketches and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and loved it.
Really early on into the panto career then, from a really young age. So most actors wouldn't have that chance, would they?
No, really young.
Like I say, there's a lot of people you trained with
who
would kill for the career that you've forged.
The early start, yeah. Very lucky.
And then you teach drama as well now.
Yeah, love that.
Tell me about your drama school. Actually, I should just say it. Like, my daughter Emma goes to one of yours. Yes, you've loads of branches everywhere.
Yes.
And she goes, and she is quite shy, I would say.
Yeah.
But then when she gets on a stage or gets into your class, different Emma emerges. And that's the secret to it, isn't it?
That's
the whole why.
That's it. It's an outlet to be creative and be someone else and just have no one like looking at you or making comments, just to let loose. Yeah, it's amazing. And I would say that the stage school is my favourite job of the year.
Really?
Absolutely. There is no better feeling than a child that comes in looking at the floor. The mam said, you know, he's a bit shy. Okay, no problem. And in 4 weeks to see that little boy or little girl come in, head up, shoulders down and confident. And I go, oh my God, it works. There's no better job satisfaction in the world than that, you know. When you get texts from parents saying you've changed our daughter's life, or you've no idea what this does for them, like there is no better feeling in the world. And that's my team of teachers as well. They're just amazing, you know. And I built that school from, you know, nothing to, you know, being everywhere, and I love it.
How many do you have?
There's 6 stage schools now. Yeah,
incredible. And you put on a big show every year.
Yeah. Every child gets an opportunity in the show. Yeah.
But it's not really about getting on the stage then, from what you've said. It's about giving them a bit of confidence.
It's not about the star quality. No.
Mm-hmm.
For me, a student going off to London and becoming and seeing their dream, amazing. Of course, I love that. But for me, it's the child who came in non-competent to stand on stage and deliver something and see that difference in them. For me, that's more of a tick box than the child that goes off and makes it on the West End, you know?
It sounds to me like it plays into what you went through as a child, and now you're giving that gift of confidence and acceptance to...
because it was such a safe space for me.
Yeah.
And an escapism for me that I wanted to do. I suppose I was so relatable to it that I wanted to do for other children like me, who mightn't have the best...
But you know, Rob, that thing they say, don't put your daughter on stage, don't put your child on the stage.
Mm.
Do you worry for some children who maybe are pushed and pushed and pushed and it's not the right thing for them?
Can always tell. Can always tell, and they don't last long. It's only the children that want to be there and want to do the work that will come every week. The stagical mums who push the children in to be the star, they usually drop.
What is it about? Why do you think people do that?
I think they're living their dream through their child.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a lot of that.
How do you deal with that?
Especially the Irish dancing. You see an awful lot of really passionate Irish dancing moms were Irish dancing champions themselves.
Oh, yeah.
But didn't get there.
Listen, I know all about Irish dancing too. Don't talk to me. That's a whole other podcast.
But yeah, you do. I think it is living their dream through their child in a school musical or something and want that for their child, but the child has no interest.
Mm.
If they have no interest, they don't stay long.
How do you deal with that though, if you have a really pushy parent?
We're very lucky. Touching all the wood. We're very lucky. We have really good parents and really nice parents. Mm-hmm.
But have you ever had to say, sorry now, Mary couldn't act your way out of a paper bag?
No, never had to do that. Thank God. Yeah.
Or why didn't Mary get a part in the play?
Yeah, we sometimes get that. We sometimes get that. And we say we try and keep it fair every year. You know, Mary had the lead role last year and this year it's Siobhan's turn.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, Siobhan.
Are you a bit steely in that regard as well? Can if you need to be?
I say to the teachers, if somebody really wants to sing, try and find something for them to sing. Even if it's a group song with maybe four or five singers, try and give them that opportunity. But obviously, you know, the best will get the part. And it has to be that. Has to be the most talented gets the part. Has to be.
I'll be coming into you now going, why didn't she get that part?
Exactly.
And she'll be singing on her own.
Yeah exactly. I'll say ban her from the front desk. Ban that Claire Byrne wagon. Yeah.
Here she's coming again.
But yeah, but if you're only coming for parts, then don't come.
Mm-hmm.
Come for the experience. Come for the learning. You know, come for the process.
You love children, don't you?
Love children, yeah. Yeah.
I can see that in you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of, it's unusual because you don't have children.
No.
For somebody who doesn't have that experience of having their own children, to have that passion about giving them a love for,
love.
For life and for confidence. And where do you think that's coming from?
Maybe that's coming from the secondary school experience, and I just think there's an innocence, and isn't it great for them to get confidence through drama or dance, and to see that. I just love it, seeing them in their faces and happy faces.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm on stage in panto and I see the little girl, if we're doing Cinderella and we look down, there's three little girls in their Cinderella dresses. I mean, you'd have to be inhuman not to find that so cute. Yeah, I love their energy, the innocence. I love everything. Yeah.
Would you like to have children one day?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
It's in plan at some point.
Maybe.
So now, listen, you know the whole point of this podcast series is to find out, can I do this thing that I have never done?
I know.
I want you to be completely honest with me here. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind if you say, I don't think that you could stand on that stage and do that. What do you think?
I think you could. I think you could.
But I'm not a trained actor.
Yeah, but you deal with obstacles every day. I listen to your show. You have politicians on. You have to deal with them trying to get out of scenarios. That takes really cleverness and on-the-spot thinking, which you need for improvisation. I think you'd be brilliant.
But I can't dance. I can't sing.
No such thing as can't. No such thing as can't.
Could you teach me, do you think?
We could get you doing a box step, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd get you doing a box step.
I'd probably manage that, I think.
Yeah, and the costume changes, and the glamour. You're very glamorous, Claire.
Well, I don't know about that.
I think Ireland would say Claire Byrne's very glamorous and Buffy's very glamorous.
Can I be a panto dame if I'm a woman, though?
Yes. June Rogers was a panto dame.
Of course.
Adele King, Twink.
Twink.
Was a panto dame. Maureen Potter, the great Maureen Potter. She came on the telly the other day and I said to Shane, stop everything. He doesn't even know who she is. Stop everything. He's like, why? It was reeling in the ears. Maureen Potter is on the telly. Everything must stop and we must listen to what Maureen has to say.
Is she your
icon? Brendan Grace and Maureen Potter. I still watch Brendan Grace all the time.
I love that you say Brendan Grace.
I love him.
You know, he had a pub just outside Dublin.
Yes.
In later years. My father would drive up there to go and have a look at him. He'd be too shy to say hello, but he just wanted to have a look at him. He was a hero in our house.
A hero in my house. Yeah, still. And, you know, I never saw him live. I had tickets to see him in a Regency hotel and it was the night of the shooting, so it was cancelled. And I had tickets to see him in the concert hall and Panto was extended and I couldn't go. So I was never meant to see him live for some reason.
No, you're never.
So I went to the tribute and I spoke to Eileen, his wife, and I said, you have no idea. I said, I star in Pantos all the time. I said, Brendan and his one-liners.
It was just the simplicity of the jokes.
Yes.
It was one, and I won't be able to tell it well, but it was... Yeah. The husband who gets two ties from his wife goes upstairs, puts on a tie, comes down for his Christmas dinner, and she turns to him and said, did you not like the other one? Did you not? You know, just, I love it. It's just
see, you can tell a joke. There's a nut. Claire Byrne, star. We haven't cast the genie yet in Aladdin. Listen. Would you rub your lamp twice a day on stage?
Rub your lamp twice a day on stage.
That's a whole other show.
Oh my God, we're going to be arrested. Rob, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much. I'm going to put this on my maybe list.
Okay.
Are there any never have I evers that you have? Never have you ever?
Do you know, I there is one really important thing that's on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to see the Rupert Guinness Theatre back open. So the Rupert Guinness Theatre is on Walting Street, just beside Guinness's. It's a 600-seater, beautiful venue. It was all going to be reopened. Dublin City Council came together with Diageo. They were going to open it. So it's fallen somewhere. We don't know where it's fallen. There's a petition online that I've started. If people want to go on and Google Rupert Guinness Theatre petition, they'll see the petition. I have 1,500 signatures. We just need the government to fund this. I mean, they have a surplus for a rainy day. It's raining. It's pouring.
And you say...
Maybe if we call it the Bike Shed Theatre.
Listen.
What do you think about that?
Might work for you.
The
yeah.
Bike Shed Theatre.
Why do we need it though? Do we need another theatre?
We badly. Oh my goodness, Claire. Tivoli closed, SFX closed, Andrews Lane is closed. All these great buildings are closed. It's a pandemic that there is not enough theatre space in Dublin.
So for you, it's never have I ever reopened a theatre.
Yes.
And this is the one that you want to reopen.
I want people, and please go on and sign that petition. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so important.
Well, never have I ever been a panto dame, and it's a strong possibility that I'm going to give this a go. I like the sound of it.
Yes,
like
I love
the sound
it.
Of it. And I trust you, you see, to mind me.
Oh, I'll
when
mind
I'm rubbing
you
me
every
lamp.
Day. Yes, I'll mind you. I'll show you how to rub your lamp to get the best wish.
I'm going to put the wig on again now. Rob, thanks so much.
Oh, thanks,
that
Claire.
Is Rob Murphy on Never Have I
Thank
Ever.
Thank you so much.
Getting the wig. Getting the wig. Here we go.
Fabulous. And he actually swear my hair when it's on. Yeah.
There we go.
Fabulous.
Back on. I swear by my hair. My
brilliant.
Hair. To my mouth
brilliant.
And everything.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Watch out. Can I take a picture of you? Because that is just brilliant.
You've been listening to Never Have I Ever with me, Claire Byrne. You'll find a new episode every Wednesday morning on the Go Loud app or wherever you stream your content. Please be sure to like and follow the podcast or leave a review. We love your feedback. You can also email me at any time. The address is never@newstalk.com. Never Have I Ever is a weekly podcast from Newstalk. The producer is Tom Donnelly. And don't forget, you'll find the Claire Byrne Show every weekday morning from 9, live on Newstalk Radio and streaming on the Go Loud app.
Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a Newstalk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Pour your heart out.